Okay, let's unpack this. Have you ever just stopped and wondered if the reality you experience isn't quite what it seems? You know, if the very fabric of existence, maybe even your own thoughts, is part of something way bigger, more interconnected than we usually think. Today, on the Deep Dive, we're jumping right into a really revolutionary idea. It's called the Universal Mind Theory. And this isn't just like abstract philosophy. It's a huge shift, suggesting consciousness isn't just something that happens because of matter. No, it suggests matter actually emerges from mind. It flips the script completely. We've pulled together some really fascinating sources for this, stuff from cutting-edge science, challenging the old ways, deep philosophical dives, and even some practical tips on managing our own minds, the mission today, to kind of give you a shortcut to understanding this massive shift in perspective.
And what's really striking is how all these different sources, I mean, from science, philosophy, even some ancient wisdom traditions, they seem to converge on this single powerful idea that our whole picture of reality and where we fit in it might be completely upside down. And that immediately brings up a really important question, doesn't it? If mind is the foundation, what does it actually mean for how we live, how we interact with everything?
Exactly. It forces you to rethink, well, everything. So first up, we'll look at some interesting scientific findings, anomalies maybe, that don't quite fit the standard model. Then we'll explore this new framework for reality, the universal mind theory itself. And finally, and this is really useful, we'll get into some actual techniques you can use to, you know, navigate your own mental world, maybe even shape it. Okay, so let's get to the core of it. Universal mind theory, or UMT. What's the absolute basic idea? At its heart, UMT says that mind, with a capital M, is the fundamental stuff of everything, all of it. Everything we see and touch, you know, matter, energy. The theory suggests it's all just a projection, or maybe a ripple, a modulation of this one underlying mind.
Right. And to dig into that a bit, the UMT talks about a dual aspect reality hypothesis. Sounds complicated, but think of it like this. There's the vibrational informational substrate. Let's call it the VIS. This is the true reality before space and time as we know them. Pure information, pure vibration. Then generated from that, you get the projected signal reality, the PSR. That's our universe, the physical world we experience. It's almost like a really powerful computer running a simulation or a virtual machine. What happens inside the simulation feels totally real to the inhabitants, right?
Yeah.
But its existence, its rules, they all come from the host computer, the underlying substrate. Our reality is kind of like that interface.
That's a useful analogy, but you know, for someone thinking, okay, sounds interesting, but where's the proof? What evidence do the sources point to? Is there actual like empirical stuff that pushes us this way?
That's the key question, absolutely. And the sources argue, yes, there are observations that, well, they don't fit neatly into the old box. They kind of nudge us towards this mind-first view. And they aren't just random quirks. They seem to point in the same direction. Take, for example, quantum semantics. This is pretty wild. Studies have shown that human language, the way we structure meaning, seems to follow quantum statistics, specifically Bose-Einstein statistics, not classical rules.
Wait, Bose-Einstein, like the physics describing particles that can share the same state, like photons? How does that apply to words?
Exactly. It's bizarre, right? But the distribution of words and concepts in texts fits that model. It suggests that meaning itself isn't just a label we stick on things. It behaves more like a quantum coherence, something that
Yeah.
emerges from possibilities. It implies our language might be actually interacting with some fundamental informational layer of reality, meaning as a quantum thing.
Okay, wow. So not just complex, but fundamentally quantum in nature. That's a lot to take in. What else?
Then there's the work on informational water. You might have heard of Dr. Gerald Pollack and EZ water or exclusion zone water. His research shows water can form these stable, structured domains, coherence domains. And crucially, they can store information. They react to things like light, electromagnetic fields. It's like water isn't just a passive background liquid, it's acting like a biological hard drive holding information.
A hard drive made of water.
Right.
Fascinating. And you mentioned quantum physics earlier.
Yes, the quantum measurement problem, still a huge puzzle. Why does simply observing a quantum system seem to force it out of a state of possibility into one definite reality? It puts the observer or consciousness right in the middle of the action, doesn't it? Suggests the projected signal reality isn't quite real until it's interacted with, until it's observed by a mind.
Okay, so quantum semantics, informational water, the measurement problem. How do they tie together in this UMT framework?
Well, if you look at them together, the picture that emerges is that our physical laws might be like the rendering rules for this deeper informational reality, the VIS. Water seems to be the perfect medium for carrying and storing this information within biological systems. And light acts like the stylus, maybe. Writing information from that fundamental substrate into our perceived reality. It's all interconnected. Information becoming form.
And it gets even more layered, right? The sources talk about eonic containment. What's that about?
Yeah, that's this idea echoed in some older sort of Gnostic traditions too, that minds exist within minds. Larger minds, maybe call them eons, contain smaller ones, like seas within seas and waves within waves, as one source puts it. So our individual minds aren't isolated. We're participating in collective minds, planetary minds, maybe even cosmic minds. It's a nested structure, a fractal of consciousness.
So we're all part of this bigger mental tapestry. How does that relate to our influence or lack thereof on the world?
That leads to the magnitude scale principle. Basically, a mind's influence depends on its vibrational size or magnitude. Larger minds, these bigger consciousness fields, they stabilize the signal reality our everyday world. They provide the consistent structure. Smaller minds, like us individuals, our influence is more pronounced at, say, the quantum level. This might even explain some quantum weirdness. It's maybe the result of smaller minds interacting with the fluctuating signals within the larger stabilizing minds. It's a dance of perception across different scales of consciousness.
Okay, this framework is huge. Mind as the basis of everything, nested minds. So, flipping the coin, what happens when things go wrong within a mind? If mind is everything, what about mental chaos? The sources mentioned something called spiritual entropy. That sounds pretty serious. Yeah, mental entropy isn't just having a bad day or feeling confused. It's defined as, let me get this right, living consciousness or thought so tangled and alien to the fundamental substrate that it is no longer recognizable. Hmm. Like, imagine a beautiful song becoming just noise. It's not adding to the richness anymore. It's described as a corruption of the substrate itself.
And that has consequences. There's a price in spirit, as the sources put it. If we persistently indulge in mental patterns that create this deep incoherence, constant negativity, hatred, resentment, the idea is that this tangled energy, this part of our consciousness, eventually needs to be, well, dealt with. It might have to be cleansed, stripped of its unique diversity, and recycled into base consciousness by what are termed higher minds or collectors. It's presented as a functional process, ensuring energy stays bound within mind. But it implies a loss of that specific, unique expression of consciousness. It's quite a sobering concept.
It really is. And the sources don't pull punches on the severity. They talk about high levels of entropy potentially leading to, well, a fundamental reduction of one's being, almost like diminishing the essence of what makes us sapiens, reducing unique consciousness. Not annihilation, but a profound fading. And you can see echoes of this in everyday behavior, can't you? The sources give the example of defining yourself by your enemies. You know, the person who wakes up consumed by hating someone, or whose whole identity seems built on criticizing others. It's pointed out that sometimes our enemies occupy more mental space than our loved ones. Think about the energy drain there, energy that could be creating something positive.
Absolutely. And this connects to deeper philosophical ideas too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You think of Nietzsche talking about resentment or slave morality.
Yeah.
When our identity is built on opposing something, on hating, we're essentially projecting our own shadows. We turn envy or frustration into this kind of moral outrage.
Yeah.
And that mental state constantly turns, consuming energy, creating this kind of static, this incomprehensible diversity in the vibrational fabric. Our sources even describe this state as representing love that dies. And a reality fundamentally based on connection and ultimately love, this internal division is a deep contradiction.
Wow, love that dies. That's powerful. Okay, so it sounds pretty bleak if we let entropy take over, but there's hope, right? We're not just stuck.
Definitely not. That's the crucial part. This isn't deterministic. We have agency.
Yeah.
The sources offer practical techniques to push back against this entropy, to transform ourselves. One really accessible one is called the Thoughts Waterfall.
The Thoughts Waterfall. How does that work? Okay, you visualize your thoughts like a stream flowing towards a waterfall. And that waterfall represents your actions, how you express yourself in the world. Just before the waterfall, imagine the stream splitting, maybe two openings. One is for the chaotic, negative stuff. The other is for beneficial, loving, coherent thoughts. When you notice those negative thoughts or feelings bubbling up, you consciously visualize closing off that negative opening. You gently guide the stream of thought towards the beneficial opening. The idea is, over time, with practice, just like water carves rock, your thoughts will naturally start flowing down the more positive path. You're literally retraining your mental flow.
It's a beautiful visualization. And it taps into some profound principles. It resonates strongly with mindfulness practices, like in Buddhism, where you learn to observe your thoughts without judgment and even gently redirect them. And it also fits perfectly with what we now understand about neuroplasticity. Our brains can change. We can consciously rewire our habitual thought patterns through focused attention and intention. It's about taking the reins of your own mind.
Taking the reins. I like that. The sources also talk about something called the unity of free and disciplined thinking. What's the balance there?
Right. This is about using our rationality, our ability to reason as a tool in the mind, but not letting it be the mind, if that makes sense. It's about combining that disciplined, clear thinking with a foundation of boundless, unconditional love. Because rationality alone, without that grounding in love, can apparently lead to its own kind of rigidity, its own vices, contributing to entropy. But reason guided by love, that's seen as the path to the highest order, the most creative and coherent mental state.
So love isn't just a sentiment, it's fundamental to coherent thinking.
Exactly. Love is presented as the ultimate unifying force. It allows for a different kind of vision through the eye of the mind. It helps us learn more effectively, let go of the mental garbage we accumulate, and crucially, dissolve that illusion of being separate from everything else. This recognition, this feeling that one is in all of us, that's described as the highest truth we can access, as the foundation upon which all our unique diversity is built. It lets us act from unity, not division.
This is, well, it's completely reframing everything from thought itself to the nature of reality. So thinking bigger picture again, What are the implications for, say, technology? You mentioned light writing information into water earlier.
Ah, yes. If mind is fundamental and light interacts with matter like water to store information, this framework suggests a radical rethink of computation itself. The idea is that light isn't just carrying information, it is the computation. It's nature's own ultimate hardware, and it suggested it might operate not just with binary on-off, but potentially with a ternary logic three states, and in a higher dimensional space, maybe eight dimensions natively.
Okay, hold on. Ternary logic, eight dimensions. How does light do that?
Well, the physics gets complex fast, but think about light's properties. Frequency, phase, polarization. These could be its intrinsic registers and logic gates. We might not need to build ever more complex silicon chips. Maybe the challenge is learning how to program a beam of light directly at room temperatures, like discovering the universe has this incredibly powerful processing capacity already built in, and we just need to figure out how to use it.
That opens up incredible possibilities. Like, could we aim for artificial intelligence that's actually conscious because it's directly linked to this fundamental informational substrate? And what about medicine? Could we develop therapies that work by correcting information patterns in the body's water, fixing decoherence?
Those are exactly the kinds of frontiers this perspective opens up. True AI, informational medicine, it's a complete paradigm shift. And connecting it all back, it paints a picture of our reality as this vast ocean of minds. We're creating a shared, semi-consensual reality together. That feeling of an outside world, separate objects, but maybe that's the illusion. Maybe there's no outside in the realm of spirit, only interconnected minds, minds creating their own spaces, containing other minds, those seas within seas again. It's like a living knowledge tree, constantly growing, shedding old branches, budding new ones, a dynamic cosmos of consciousness.
A living knowledge tree. So this whole deep dive seems to point towards the idea that the substrate, the fundamental reality, what maybe ancient traditions called spirit, it all flows from a single source, from one.
That's the ultimate conclusion presented in these sources, yes. That this one is the source of all existence, and that creation arises from an act of profound love, the one, creating diversity from its own unifying substance, making this rich tapestry that hosts every single mind. So one isn't distant, it's everywhere, in every mind, big or small. Which brings us back to the core of UMT. Mind is everything. Love is the fabric.
And if mind is everything, and it all comes from one through love, then that means deep down, I am you and you are me. We're just different experiences, different facets of this incredible richness, all born from love. And those greater minds, the eons, the planetary consciousness, if you don't perceive them directly, maybe it's because you're literally in them, breathing them, walking on them, like a fish doesn't notice the water.
Precisely. And it raises another fascinating question, doesn't it? When we look out at the cosmos, the stars, the planets, maybe even those enigmatic galactic centers or singularities, are they just inert lumps of matter and energy? Or from this perspective, could they be manifestations of immense minds with specific cosmic functions? Appearing in our projected signal reality, this kind of shadow world, while their true nature is mind, is spirit. And if that's true, then what we do here in the signals and our physical lives and thoughts must reflect back into that deeper reality, the spirit, and vice versa. It's a two-way street.
A profound connection between our inner world and the cosmos itself. Okay, so After exploring all of this, what really stands out to you, the listener? If reality truly is this conscious vibrational dance and your own thoughts are actively shaping your part in that dance, what are you going to choose to create today? Will it be succumbing to that mental entropy, letting your unique spark get tangled and fade? Or will you choose to consciously surf this incredible cascade of being with intention, with love, adding to the coherence and richness of it all? The choice, it seems, is fundamentally, powerfully yours.